Good morning, and welcome to the July 29th edition of Southern Champaign County Today. My name is Lori Talkington for the Illinois Radio Reader, and today's date is Thursday, July 30th, 2026. Let's start with a rundown of all the fun at Sydney Fun Days 2026, this article by Ann Roten. Friday, July 24th was a cloudy but nice day for the launch of this year's Sydney Improvement Group-sponsored Sydney Fun Days. The day started off with a 2 o'clock to 7 p.m. Lego Derby building and practice at the Sydney Community Building. Jonathan Poulter performed at the beer tent from 5 in the afternoon until 8 p.m., followed by the B-Sides Champagne performing from 8:30 to 11:30 p.m., and then the movie The Sandlot was shown at dusk at the Sydney Community Building parking lot. Saturday, July 25th was also cloudy and on and off rainy for the second day of Sydney Fun Days. Sydney United Church hosted a great breakfast from 8 to 10 in the morning at the church. A book signing by local authors, including Vivian Brown, representing Fred Olds from Sydney, Jean Forsyth of Philo, and first-time local author Kim Bennett Taylor, took place at the Sydney Community Library from 9 a.m. until noon. Money made from the sale of Fred Olds' books was donated to the Sydney Community Library, and illustrator and assistant for the day, Vivian Brown, arranged to provide times for anyone wanting to have their books autographed by Fred at the event to take place. A kiddie bike parade went on at 9:30 in the morning. The Sydney Kidney Tractor Pull began at 10 a.m. The Bags Tournament registration started at 10 until 11 at the beer tent, which opened at 10 a.m., and the Bags Tourney started at 11:30 a.m. A very nice group of kids participated in the Kiddie Bike Parade, and each participant received ribbons and gift cards from Casey's General Store, which were good for a free cookie. Candy and bike stickers were handed out as well. The Lego Derby check-in, building, and practice session took place at the Sydney Community Building from 10 until 12:20 p.m., with the Lego racing starting at 12:30. This was the third run for the Derby that started for the first time at the 2024 Sydney Fun Days. The Kiddie Tractor Pull featured kids in four age groups, to include 4 years and under, 5 and 6 year olds, 7 and 8 year olds, 9 and 10 year olds. This was sponsored by Nutrien Ag Solutions, with Harriet Farms running the tractor pull, and Mike Roy from Music by Mike doing the announcing of contestants and winners. Trophies were given out to the top 3 winners in each category. The following spelling of the winning names are as they were written down on the sign-up sheets. Willow Kurtzinger won first place, Ivy Yanders won second place, and Demon Thurman won third place in the 4-year age group. Ava Harriet took first place, Trip Thurman won second place, and Amos Harriet won third place in the 5 to 6 year old category. Theo Yanders won first place, Everett Smith Henry won second place, and Hallie Laurent won third place in the 7 and 8 year old category. A pull-off was needed in the 9 and 10-year-old category, resulting with Kate Stipp winning first place and Colson Harriet winning second place and Scarlett Huff taking third place. There were around 30 participants in this year's Kiddie Tractor Pull, and all of them received a participation ribbon in addition to each of the top 3 winners in each category being awarded a trophy. The Village of Sydney 50-year time capsule, which was buried on Saturday, June 12th in 1976, was intended to be opened on July 4th, 2026, but the actual reveal took place at 11 a.m., as it was decided that more folks would be available to see the unveiling on Sydney Fun Days. The Sydney American Legion Post 433 Commander Bill Hinch welcomed folks to the time capsule opening and began by explaining that the Village of Sydney had gifted the former downtown Sydney community and Sydney Community Library building to the Post for $1, and then they had built a new Sydney Community building on Main Street, and that the Sydney Community Library had then been relocated to two doors down. He explained that the Post had encouraged the Village of Sydney to leave the time capsule opening to take place in front of the Post, since it was originally buried there, and that the stone marker had been removed and put in storage by the Village of Sydney on Monday, July 13th, by maintenance supervisor Dustin Betts and Village of Sydney maintenance worker Eric Osterber prior to revealing the contents of the copper box. Commander Hinch then asked Adjutant Bill McLean, also known as George Washington, for the Fun Day celebration, to explain the meaning of American flags in place in honor of America's 250th birthday. Adjutant McLean provided a brief explanation about each of the flags, told all that the Post 433 Museum was not open, but that he did have a display set up in the meeting room for folks to visit if they would like following the time capsule unveiling. Commander Hinch introduced Village of Sydney President John Finn, who welcomed folks to the time capsule presentation before introducing the Sydney Board of Trustees and the Sydney Improvement Group President Donna Hooker. Donna began by saying that her third grade class had written some letters that were to be buried in the time capsule, and that some of her friends had grown up in Sydney were there today to witness the reveal of the time capsule contents. Sydney American Legion Post Commander Bill Hinch then asked Donna and three other folks who had grown up in Sydney to retrieve the buried time capsule. Joey White was called forward to open up the box, which was made by Jim Herakinek, who worked for White Roofing and Lumber. He explained that he had worked under Jim at one time. After Jim made the box, Joey's grandfather, Louis White, who owned White Roofing and Lumber, soldered the box closed. And later, Joey stated that he really appreciated being asked to cut the box open. Joey then did cut the box open with tin snips that his grandfather had owned and newer ones that he owned, and in a matter of minutes he had it opened. Donna Hooker then peered inside with excitement and reported that the contents had remained dry during its 50-year encapsulation. She then began going through the contents inside the capsule, holding up many of the items for folks to see, and reported that there was a 1976 Sydney Bicentennial book, an edition of Southern Champaign County Today from June 18, 1976, which sold for 20 cents a copy of that time. There was also a copy of the Courier newspaper, a phone book from 1976, an individual's tax bill from 1976, a hand-drawn picture of downtown Sydney from that year, a Sears and Roebuck 1976 catalog, and photos in an envelope, one showing Sydney's ice cream gang, pictures of the town calendar, and a Sydney Community Bank book. Just some of those items that will be gone through and displayed at the Sydney Community Building for everyone from the Village of Sydney to see. The letters that Donna Hook's third grade class had written were sadly not in the box, and we honestly don't know what became of them. Moving on during Sydney Fun Days, a 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. car show was enjoyed by all and was followed by Lexi Tiefel, former American Idol contestant, performing at the beer tent from 2 to 4 p.m. The 3 p.m. Sydney Fun Days Parade showcased around 20 parade entries and inflatables for the kids at the Sydney Community Building were open from 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. Fantastic food was available from a variety of food vendors for all to enjoy, along with a variety of crafts and gift vendors to help you get an early start on your Christmas gift buying. Sydney Fun Days music continued, with Hunter Lucas providing entertainment in the beer tent from 5 to 8 p.m. and concluded with Owen Knapp and the Rusty Strings performing from 8:30 to 11:30 p.m. The two-day Sydney Fun Days 2026 was sponsored by the Village of Sydney, Longview Bank, Nutrien Ag Solutions, Frito-Lay, Winston's Old Bank, White's Roofing and Lumber, the Sydney Saloon, Dillman Sanitary, Mum's Construction, Premier Co-op, Music by Mike, Red Barn Vet, Casey's General Store, The Goose and the Gander, Prairie Land Insurance, and the Sydney Improvement Group. Our thanks to everyone who came out and enjoyed the day and made the day so enjoyable for Sydney Fun Days 2026. Thanks to all. Next, we'll turn to news from Rocket Nation, brought to us by Diane Ducey, who reminds us that summer isn't over yet. There's lots of events coming up still. Special Olympics in Region 1 will benefit from an upcoming golf outing in Savoy on the Orange and Blue golf courses on Friday, August 7th. And as the announcer for the event, Diane wants to hear from another mid-80s Unity grad, Dave Breen, who's retired from his CEO duties now but loves to compete in the golf outing. There's a flamazing race scheduled at Sholem Pool on Friday, August 14th, so you can buy a $5 pink flamingo or Zazzle of 10 for $40 as the plastic birds go down the slide through the lazy river between 5 to 7 p.m. Diane plans to do a shout-out to ShambanaMoms.com for keeping our community in the loop on so many terrific summertime events in our area. Once again, summer's still underway in Rocket Nation. Turning now to community news and notes, we want to remind everyone that Menards Food Drive is underway until July 31st, and they do have food items, unperishable food items, available to buy, and there's a donation box near the exit doors where you can donate them. Tolono food pantries are open every Monday from 5 to 6:30 and Friday in the morning from 9 to 10:30 at St. Patrick's Catholic Charities in Tolono. The free food pantries located at the parish provides fresh produce, meat, and pantry items open to all residents of Champaign County. Also in Tolono, every Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m., the Giving Place is open to help families in need of food items. School registration is in the news now, and information that parents need for registration is on the school website. Online registration opened up on July 13th, and in-person registration for incoming kindergartners and new students is scheduled for Monday, August 3rd, from 8 a.m. until 1:30, and on Tuesday, August 4th, from 11 in the morning until 6 p.m. Teachers will be returning on Monday, August 14th, and students will be returning to the classroom on Tuesday, August 18th. Mark your calendars. Next, we have our weekly update from the Tolono Public Library, and they begin with the great news that they have received an important new grant. For the second year in a row, the Tolono Public Library has been awarded the Library's Transforming Communities Grant from the Association of Small and Rural Libraries. Last year, this grant led to, among other things, our automatic new front doors. On Thursday, July 30th, they opened for the first time. And we are offering two chances for you to share your thoughts on how we can continue to improve accessibility at the library. The first session of the Community Accessibility Discussion Forum was at 10 a.m. in the library's meeting room, and the second session was in the evening at the same location. We'd like library patrons to choose the time that works best for them and let your voice be heard on how we can continue to make the library more accessible for everyone. For something fun to do this week, swing by the library on Saturday, August 1st from 3 to 6 in the afternoon. But you may have to park a little further east down Main Street, as we are hosting our first annual end-of-summer block party. Main Street will be closed off from Vorsey to just in front of the library building. There will be music from DJ Mike, community booths for the Tolono Historical Society, and the Friends of the Library, which will be hosting a bake sale, and the Village of Tolono, which will be hosting pickup for their school supply drive. Burrito King, Lucky Eddie's Walk and Roll, and Holden a Cone will be parked there as well to keep you fed and the good treats coming. Play some games, get your face painted, grab a balloon animal, or step inside for a quiet puzzle and a coloring room in the air-conditioned library. Used books will also be available for sale. And don't miss this last bash before going back to school, August 1st. It's also a great time to pick up your summer reading prizes. Saturday, August 1st is the last day of our summer reading challenge. So all your records must be logged and all prizes redeemed by 5 o'clock p.m. Saturday, August 1st. Grand prize winners will be drawn the following week. We have many more programs, activities, and events coming up this first week of August. Be sure to check our website and our social media to stay up to date on everything that's happening at the Tolono Public Library. Next up, we have our weekly news report from the Philo Public Library, and the headline is big. Yes, we have the Michael DVD. It's available for checking out, as is Crime 101 with Chris Hemsworth. These are the newest DVDs in the library, and they can be checked out for 3 days each. Spread the word. Michael is in town. August 1st is also your last chance to submit recipes for the Philo Community Cookbook. We really would like to have recipes from everyone who lives in Philo and loves to cook. We don't know if any of you have the same problem as we do regarding recipes. I don't measure ingredients. So, as your librarian, I decided it was time to make one of our favorites once again. But this time I did measure the number of cups and teaspoons and tablespoons and dashes of this or that. I now have a recipe ready to submit for the cookbook. I hope you do too. Another August 1st reminder applies to the reading challenges for anyone between babyhood and age 18. Everyone under 18 is challenged to keep reading throughout the summer and mark your challenge sheets once you've reached the goals that were set for you. You're eligible for a prize. You have until August 8th to bring your sheet in and claim your prize, but the sheets themselves will not be available after 7 p.m. on July 31st. That's a Friday. There are some really popular books in demand lately. For example, editions of Yesterday and Theo of Golden and The Shampoo Effect are new and very popular at the Philo Library, as well as in other local libraries. We do have many of them, although they may be checked out. If there is a book that you want to read, for instance, for a book club, and you have access to a computer, you can either check to see if the Philo Library has the book in and if it's available, and if it's not readily available, add your name to the waiting list. They do move pretty quickly. Now, one thing you should know is that if the Philo Library owns the book, and there's a long list of readers throughout Illinois Heartland who want the book, our patrons receive priority for books that we own in the Philo Library. Also, if there's a long waiting list for a book and Philo doesn't own it, you can call or email or stop in and ask if we can purchase a copy of your book for the Philo Library. We're happy to accommodate requests if we can. Next week, we'll talk about the reading lists for St. Thomas and other new books coming into the Philo Library. And until then, as we always say, thanks for reading. And now, let's take a moment to look up at the night sky, brought to us by David Leakey, retired director of the Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College. And he notes that Mercury will be visible in the mornings. If you're an early riser, you should start looking for the planet Mercury this week in the east before sunrise. Mercury had its best evening view last month, and now that repeats in the morning. Start looking now in the east northeast around 5 a.m. as the planet enjoys the company of the stars of the Gemini twins. Mercury will brighten and be highest about August 5th when it rises at 4:30 a.m. Wednesday brings us the full moon. July's full moon is the buck moon as the deer's antlers are in full growth mode. It's also called the Thunder Moon for obvious reasons. Jupiter appears to pass behind the sun this week to reappear in the morning sky in mid-August. The dwarf planet Pluto is at its brightest this week, but alas, it's still pretty faint. It will require at least a 12-inch telescope to spy it visually, and that's under a very dark sky. The key to seeing Pluto is to look for it over several weeks to detect whether or not it's in motion. And now we'll spend a few minutes hearing some ramblings from the Village Idiot, courtesy of author Kurt Foster. And he begins, "When I was in elementary school and high school, history was taught largely as an exercise in remembering dates, names, and places. I'm not especially good at that, though I am quite good at remembering any number of other things. It was only many years later that a college-level history teacher explained to me that it was important to learn about religious and political movements that created a context in which notable events took place. Our war for independence from the British Crown was driven by the Age of Enlightenment and a religious revival in the colonies known as the Great Awakening. Names, dates, and places became more than lists to be memorized. They fit into a larger framework. This came to mind with a recent news story. Secretary of State Marco Rubio was at a meeting of Associations of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN is its acronym. He warned its representatives that allowing Iran to assert control over the Strait of Hormuz would set a dangerous precedent. the Straits of Malacca, and other straits in the region, which currently enjoy freedom of navigation, could also be subject to controls that could disrupt the world economy, he warned. This brought to mind the Age of Exploration. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. A major impetus for the voyages of exploration was to seek a route to the Spice Islands, which was not controlled by the locals, who were Muslims, the Ottoman Turks, that is, who controlled points east of Gibraltar, and the Muslim Sultanates, which controlled the waterways in the East Indies. They charged heavy tolls for passage. When no alternative routes could be found, the Europeans resorted to military conquest. First, the Portuguese, and then the Dutch, took control of what is now Indonesia, which became known as the Dutch East Indies. So, as far as precedent goes, one might say that ship has sailed. Curiously, I saw no mention of this in news accounts. I'll give the ASEAN representative full marks for their diplomatic skills, because they didn't burst out laughing. But I am quite sure that the ASEAN nations have a large material interest in keeping their own vital choke points freely navigable. In the present instance, the passage of ships through the Strait of Hormuz, and now the Bab al-Mandab Strait, is being threatened by, respectively, Iran and its proxies, the Houthis. The recent attack on a ship in the Bab al-Mandab Strait has sent the price of oil over $100 a barrel. Threats of disproportionate military reprisals, or even of waging war against the civilian population of Iran, have not coerced the Iranian authorities to drop their assertion of control over the Strait of Hormuz. As far as oil and natural gas are concerned, there are two main alternatives to the Strait of Hormuz. One is to move more of the stuff overland, and the oil companies are actively pursuing the construction of pipelines to do just that. Yes, the pipelines would be vulnerable to attack by drones or missiles, but they would be a lot easier to repair than a severely damaged tanker. The other method is to sail around Africa. This would take an extra 2 weeks and would cost an extra $300,000 to $800,000 in fuel per ship. This brings me to a subject I've also always been good at, numbers. Soon after Operation Epic Fury began, the Iranians announced their scheme to charge tolls on ships transiting the Strait of Hormuz. One version I read about was they would charge tankers $1 per barrel they were carrying. For a medium-sized tanker carrying 2 million barrels, the toll would then be $2 million. That's more than the extra cost of sailing around Africa, but it has the built-in credibility of being straightforward protection money paid in exchange for being left alone. Several months later, Secretary Rubio loudly proclaimed that no nation had the right to charge a toll to navigate through the Strait of Hormuz, and he was right. But then, 2 days later, his boss proposed charging a fee of 20% of the value of a ship's cargo to escort it safely through the Strait of Hormuz. Never mind the uncertainty of safety through military escort, and never mind the brazen hypocrisy. Let's look at the numbers. For a tanker with 2 million barrels of oil, even at the pre-war price of around $70 per barrel, that would be a fee of $28 million, Again, the Iranians' proposed fee for that tanker would be $2 million, and the extra cost of sailing around Africa is less than $1 million, though there is also the extra shipping time of about 2 weeks. I can only imagine how many messages the shipping companies sent the president in response to his proposal of confiscatory fees, telling him what he could do to himself. He dropped his proposal the next day. This concludes our reading of the July 29th edition of Southern Champaign County Today. My name is Lori Talkington for the Illinois Radio Reader, and I invite you to join us again next week.